You're listening to Blind Entrepreneurship, an interview series podcast that highlights the stories of the top business professionals around the world. In each episode, we explore how entrepreneurs overcame blindness in business in order to execute their vision. This podcast is brought to you by Penji. I am your host, Jonathan Grzbowski, and today we have Alex Gilbert on the show. Alex is the CEO of Red Queen Gaming, which makes it easy to create tools designed for video game players. They work directly with game developers to make their in-game data accessible to talented toolmakers, who then use that data on their development suite to create fun, exciting tools for the player community. Alex left his comfortable job where he previously was a metrology engineer, which I had no idea what that meant until I asked him, which is, for everybody who wants to know and is curious, is the study of weights and measures. And they do diagnostic, he used to work with diagnostic equipment, and basically anything that takes a measurement, Alex did it. So you know this guy's smart. And he did that in the Air Force and Lockheed Martin. A quick disclaimer here. In the beginning of the episode, the audio is slightly pitchy, and I do apologize for that. The team fixed as much as we possibly could, but because of the pitches and the equipment that was being used, it is a little up and down. So if your ears are hurting within about the first 10% of the episode, I do apologize, but it does get fixed at the later half, in the very beginning half. So in 10% in, of this entire episode, you'll hear it, but after that, it'll be fixed. I've personally known Alex for a few years now. We went to the same high school together, believe it or not, and we didn't talk at all because he was much older than he, not much, but he's older than me. However, I've come to respect Alex an F ton. And this guy is incredibly smart and way ahead of the game, so to speak, not to be too punny. His company is forward thinking, and I'm really excited to watch his success. I feel like Alex's company is one of those dark horse type of companies because not a lot of people may understand the industry that he's in, and it's not the most like sexy thing in the world. He might fly under the radar, but this company that he's created has such a huge potential and huge opportunity, and what he's doing for the community that he's invested in is only a matter of time until that's proven to be true. And he's already had substantial success in the very early on of Red Queen. Some of the highlights of the episode are when we talk about the current state of the gaming industry, the future of the industry, how developers are making money off of the world of video games, and how Twitch influencers are actually making the gaming industry a better place. I'm going to give a quick highlight for me personally, in addition to the business element, was how all this ties in, the gaming, video games ties into the world of business. But also, my favorite question has to be the Mount Rushmore, where not only does Alex, but myself, we both give our Mount Rushmore of video games. So let's get right to it.
Hey everyone, this is Alex from Red Queen. I'm really happy to announce that we are kicking off our Kickstarter campaign today. The link's down below. Basically, we are making it easier and easier to create gameplay tools for your favorite games by creating what we call the Academy, which gives you everything you need to create this stuff. And I'm super excited about announcing the RuneCrafter Endowment Fund, where we're actually going to be taking Kickstarter funds, setting them aside for people who have awesome ideas. So rather than Red Queen taking this money, it's going to go directly to the community. So if you really love the idea of people being able to create tools that you're going to use for the games that you love, check us out on Kickstarter. Thank you so much.
Today's episode is sponsored by Penji. Are you in charge of marketing for your business and need graphic design support? Let Penji design anything you need for your business, from a logo to your marketing materials, sales sheets, social media content, and so much more. Penji helps you achieve more with unlimited graphic design support, daily output, and a dedicated project manager, all at one flat monthly rate. We have an exclusive offer to the Blind Entrepreneur community. Head over to penji.co and use the coupon code BLIND for 15% off your first month. Again, that's penji.co. penji.co and use the coupon code BLIND for 15% off your first month of Penji. And now, let's get to today's episode.
Alex, welcome to the show.
Hey, man. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely, man. Anything that I can do to help a friend out and hear their story, it's going to be a good time. So I'm really excited about this episode in particular, because it's all about things that you have made a business into. And as a avid gamer myself, I'm excited to talk about. So before we get into the episode, we have to lay the foundation as to why you're a qualified expert to talk about video games. And the topic of this conversation today is the important role video games plays in our future. So we'd love to hear why you're a qualified expert to talk about video games.
I mean, this is what I've been doing since starting Red Queen, you know, being part of the industry for the past few years at the highest levels, having booths at conventions like the Game Developers Conference and traveling the world, meeting with other, you know, execs in the space, and really finding out how we can make an impact in the video game world. That's what we do.
Yeah, and you do an amazing job of it, both from a philanthropy aspect of it, but also as in a social good aspect, but also just as like a quality service and product. So absolutely, man. So let's get down to the basics. Video games are a huge industry, and especially knowing that you're not necessarily in the esports world, you're more on the video game side. I would love to hear what you believe is currently going on within the industry of video games.
I think, I could talk about this question for hours. Right now, it's all about the accessibility to tech for me. I mean, there's a lot of controversy in the amount of hours people are spending and stuff like that. And, you know, with Red Dead Redemption 2, all the stuff about 100-hour work weeks and stuff. But I think really that stuff will all eventually get worked out. By the way, I don't condone that kind of stuff where people are spending 100 hours working a week. But it's really about the tech. Over the past, you know, 10, 15 years, the tools that game developers have access to are really enabling amazing games to be built fairly quickly. You know, everybody's starting out with the same similar engines. So Unity and Unreal Engine are the two most popular gaming engines right now. You've got great programs for developing 3D art, for sound, and these tools are fairly easy to learn. You're starting to see more game design programs at universities. You're seeing you know, online courses where you can learn how to play games. You've even got engines like GameMaker Studio that really kind of dumb down the process of making games so that more and more people can build games. It's easier to make quality games. And what we're seeing is, because for the first time it's realistic to have a career in games, there's this huge influx of people learning how to make games and producing games, where the market is kind of haywire, because you just have so many games coming into the world with distribution platforms like Steam. Like Itch, where consumers have so many options. It's like cutting down the margins in an industry where there's already really small margin to begin with for games. And I think it's actually, we're going to go through a bit of a crisis when all these people who've spent $60,000 to go to universities for game dev find out that people without any work are messing with the potential margins and forcing them to like go to other jobs. I think there's a reckoning coming. So that's my take real quickly on what's going on in the industry.
Yeah. And you know, the way I prepared for this conversation in particular, I'm going to go completely off script here, which is in a good way, because now when you bring that up, I'm thinking about how developers are currently making money off of gaming. So I'd love for you to expand a little bit on that. And if you could hit, I'd love to hear your take on microtransactions. And if you could explain that as well, that'd be great.
Sure. So, you answered your own question there, in that it's very popular to have microtransactions in games these days.
Can you explain what is a microtransaction for people who don't know what it is?
Sure. So this is typically found in like mobile games where they, rather than paying for the base game, they get you little by little and say, hey, spend $2 for this shield so people can't attack you for 24 hours. Pay $2 for this weapon that's going to help you beat this level. And they kind of like, and they're really smart about it, where they'll get you like 10 hours into a game, and then they'll introduce some kind of frustration that makes you go, $20, I've played this game for 10 hours. If I went to see 5 movies, I would have spent, $60. I'll spend the $20. It's worth it. And I do believe that game developers do deserve to be making this kind of money. I don't want to make it sound like I don't think that. But it's really clever, and to the point where it can be problematic for people who have problems with
gambling.
it really is. So I think that there's a responsibility on the developer's part when it comes to these microtransactions. But to kind of step back from microtransactions, you asked, how are people making money these days on games? You're seeing more and more game developers, even AAA studios, AAA being like the highest level, think like companies like Activision and Bandai Namco. These guys are actually offering freemium games where the base game is free rather than premium games where everything used to be $50 or $60 off the bat. Now you see a lot of cool games being released for free. In fact, CSGO just released a battle royale mode yesterday and made the base game free. It's one of the most popular games in the world, and they're taking after Fortnite there. So they get out these free games, they hook you, and then they start with the microtransactions. And that has become, that was hugely popular on mobile. So mobile games actually make up a huge percentage of the depending on where you read these days, I'm seeing $160 billion market. Mobile makes up anywhere between 45% and 60% of that, depending on where you read. Microtransactions started in mobile, and now they're figuring out how to get them in PC and console games. And then you've got DLC, which is downloadable content. So you spend $50-$60 on the base game, and then you download some additional levels of a game or something like that, or some skins, and you pay an extra $5 to $20 on that.
Yeah. And I'm curious to see how that ties into what you do, and how your company is the way that it is. So could you expand a little bit more about how your organization, Red Queen, is basically trying to revolutionize the way that gaming and communication between developers are being done?
Sure. So I'll get into a little kind of gaming psychology real quick before I answer that. So in the gaming space, you have what is referred to as Bartle types. Bartle types define essentially the way players like to experience their games. So you've got four different types. It's like a matrix, essentially. So you've got killers, socializers, adventurers, and explorers. And these types like to experience their games in different ways. So killers, they like to dominate their opponents. They like to improve their skills and, you know, become more accurate, let's say, in with their weaponry in CSGO, or really understand where to strategies for moving through terrain, right? Then you've got like socializers who really like that social component, like to talk, make friends, really get into diplomacy. You've got explorers. So you get that point. Mm-hmm. Everyone likes to play games in their own way. They can experience the same game in different ways. Mm-hmm. Red Queen. Now what we do is we have a platform that makes it easy for gaming enthusiasts to create tools for game players. So these tools are things like damage calculators that a killer might use to figure out what weapon to bring into a battle, or an interactive map that an explorer could use to discover some hidden objects in the game world, right? And what this is doing is it's empowering players to take more control over their own gaming experience. You know, if I can use a tool meant for an explorer on World of Warcraft, that opens up a new way for me to play the game. I can become more engaged with my game. I'm going to enjoy it more because I'm using a tool that I chose. I'm empowered to play the game the way I want to. So what this really does is it's adding to the experience that a player already gets from their game. You know, it enhances their gameplay. And then, of course, we can use data that, we retrieve from seeing people using these tools to help game developers understand what players want to see in their games. So if somebody builds an interactive map for Fortnite, let's say. Mm-hmm. Now, Epic Games knows that's something people want to see. And we can say, here's how people are using this map. And it really tightens up the feedback loop because Epic can understand how people are using these tools outside of the game, and they can make their game better. They can see what's confusing to players, what's not in the game that they wish they could do.
Yeah.
That's powerful.
Extremely.
Closing that feedback loop and getting better information for people who are creating the game. And it makes players feel more like they're part of the game, like they're creating something that millions of players around the world are going to use. If you make a game, a tool for Star Wars, now you've contributed to that lexicon. You're part of that game forever. You know, you're part of that universe.
Absolutely. And I think that comes a long way, you know, on the business side too. If you're growing a startup, the more invested you are into helping that company grow from the very, very beginning, you're more likely to stay with that company because you made an impact on whatever small, minute detail that you were able to contribute to the company. Would you say they correlate very similar?
Oh my God, yeah, absolutely. Like, people who build tools for a particular game, they're engaged 100%. They're already enthusiastic to begin with, and now they're taking a part in helping other people enjoy that game more. That's your best customer.
Mm-hmm. Now, in order to do this, I'm not a developer by any means, but I know enough to be moderately dangerous. And so with that, and I mean moderately dangerous, I mean like turning on the computer. So that's pretty dangerous.
Oh man.
Yeah. Insane. Nice. But I'm assuming that some API has to be opened up from the game developers in order for the customers to go in and create these tools. Would that be the case?
So it depends on No, not necessarily. There's plenty of data available about games that you don't need an API to interact with.
Mm-hmm.
So for instance, let's say Final Fantasy VII, game that was made 21 years ago, right? All of this, all data about like the world, the script, the equipment, the enemies, the spells. That's all static information, but you could still build cool tools that could help you experience that game in a new way. So yeah. Right off the top of my head, in Final Fantasy VII, you have these items are called materia. Have you played FF7?
Yeah.
Okay, so you've got your materia, and depending on the combinations of materia, you have access to different spells. Yep. But you can make a, you don't need an API to just to know this information or to utilize it programmatically. You can just create your own little JSON file and use that, and then end up creating a tool where you can mix and match materia on a piece of equipment. Right. Yeah. So that's a very simple low level. But then to your point, we can go really deep. We can integrate to where we're getting real time data from a game where we know how much damage a player is doing to another one or what item they're picking up in real time, and feed a stream of that data to toolmakers for them to use in their tools. And then they can do things like enable a player to, you know, authenticate a character, pull down all of the equipment that they're currently wearing, and then ask questions like, figure out where do I go to improve this piece of equipment, and then get some information about what monsters they should go fight. And they can see that type of information in real time. They can see changes on the, in the map in real time. And those pieces do require some integration from the game developers.
But it's also the responsibility of the game developers to be able to read this feedback and then make appropriate changes, right?
So it's up to them if they want to use it in that way, if they want to analyze it.
Yeah.
We really like this starts to get into, we have this concept in Red Queen of back-end analytics and front-end analytics. I don't know if people use that term elsewhere, but we have kind of co-opted it. So the back-end analytics is if game developers can analyze user behavior by seeing, collecting data through companies like GameSparks and Delta DNA and PlayFab, where they can see like how long has a player been logged into this session? What did they buy? When people get to level 2, which character are they choosing? Hey, we put a bush over here. Or, hey, there's a treasure chest in this hidden place, but nobody's going to it. So let's put a bush here, right? Yeah. So they can analyze user behavior. I call those back-end analytics because this is like they're using it in-house. They're analyzing how players are experiencing the game. Well, the game experience for a player doesn't end when they put down their mobile device or they walk away from their computer. That game experience extends into them thinking about their game, into having conversations with their friends, into using tools on Red Queen. So when somebody creates a tool, they're getting this idea, this concept out of their head that they wish existed in the game, and they're bringing it to life. They put it on Red Queen, and now players are using these tools when they're not playing the game. And this is an entirely new layer of data that can enrich those back-end analytics. And I call it front-end because it's coming out of their head, you know, like onto the page, essentially. Yeah. So you can enrich that data. Now, we provide the opportunity for game developers to use that data however they see fit. But we actually created value out of the data without the game developer having to do any additional work. The players, we flipped the data head on its model. People, the data model on its head. Most companies, they sit on data like dragons on top of their gold hoard, right? And they're like, we don't want to share this data. We know it's valuable. A lot of us don't know what we're doing yet, but we know it's valuable. Red Queen is like, hey, let's open this data up to your users. Allow them to create the value with that data, so that the game developers don't have to. It enables the value of your data to scale.
Yep. And I think what's really interesting, it allows the game to be new again, because I think, and you can Well, let's say, how does this pertain to business, right? First, because this is very specific to your business, but how this pertains to business from my understanding of what you're saying is, okay, well, you are looking at your website, you're looking at your data, you're looking at your sales, you're analyzing everything, and you're making strategic decisions based off of the data that you receive. Especially if you're a SaaS company or if you're a online specific company, you need to look at your website and your heat map in order to find out why customers are not converting. Would you say that's very similar?
I would say that's half of it.
Okay.
I think the interesting thing that Red Queen does is it opens up the data to the stakeholders so they can add value to, you know, whatever it is that that data is referring to. So if it's a medical device and you allow hospitals or doctors or even users of a device to create tools that do something with that data, make they're adding value to that device.
Right. And I think the reason why, and we can get into a whole nother rabbit hole about this with Fortnite. And the reason why Fortnite, in my opinion, is so successful is because every couple of months they create these seasons where it completely changes the game and it makes the game fresh, unique, and new to some degree. And I think with the data that you would inevitably collect from your users and apply that to the game or apply that to the business is going to create a completely new experience for the person using the already existing game or product.
Absolutely. I totally agree. And I think to take it one step further, a game developer can only do so much in a couple months, right? They're going to make some tweaks to the game. They're going to make some changes, but imagine having 10 million players have the ability to make tools that add content to your game.
Right.
They're going to be able to make so much more of what they want to see as a community.
Totally. That,
you know, they can really affect the value in a huge way.
And speaking of value, it's like a perfect segue, which the world of Twitch, right?
Mm-hmm.
I follow people, I mean, hate them, love them or hate them, I like Ninja. I think he's an awesome dude. I know that he's in hot water right now because of some like small little things, but I think what he's doing for the industry is absolutely incredible. Another person on the completely end of the spectrum I absolutely love is Dr. Disrespect. And so the feedback that these people, and again, he's in a whole nother person, but I love his personality. And there's a whole bunch of other people that I follow too, but you know, we won't get into it. Those are probably the bigger names. What do you think is the, like, you have the data that, like, the proof, right? You have the proof of concept of people using the data and parlaying the information to the developers and then them acting on it. And then you have these huge movie stars, so to speak, in the Twitch world that are maybe complaining about particular items of the game. Is there a weight to what like a person like Dr. Disrespect would say versus the weight of like of actual proof from the developers?
Well, I think it's all going to be captured in the data. So if you've got, you know, somebody with a million Twitch followers and he or she is saying, you know, this machine gun is the best item in the game. Now you have a million people who that person is influenced, and their opinion is going to be swayed in some way. Some people, you know, most people might agree. And then that's going to be captured in the data. So I don't think you have to, I mean, Fortnite, they're on top of their influencers. So they know what people are saying and they do understand how to work with the influencers and probably get them to say what they want them to say. But I mean, it all comes down to the data in terms of determining what kind of changes you want to make. Well, retroactively, proactively, you probably want to get ahead of the data, honestly, right, in terms of like marketing, branding, positioning, and stuff like that.
And I'm curious to hear your take on the Twitch movement. And if you could just give a quick, like, one or two sentences of, like, what Twitch is and the state of that. But I would love to hear, do you think a platform like Twitch and the streaming that's happening, is that, do you think that's hurting or helping the video game world?
I think it's helping. If you think of what is the purpose of games, for the most part, it's to bring entertainment, to bring joy into people's lives. And Twitch is a tool that people can use or they can decide not to use. People use it to create content, engage with their games in new ways, feel like they are part of content creation, interact with other people around the world. This is just a social tool. I mean, it can be used nefariously, but I think Twitch does a pretty good job of, you know, regulating that. You can't regulate everything, but, you know, just making sure that it generally, like, it's a positive company. They do a lot for the game world. They're providing a lot of tools to the players, a lot of ways for game developers to improve their game, to engage their customers. I think it's going to make the game world better, and I think it's going to become more and more popular, honestly. It's going to become more and more integrated into the gaming experience. And that's not just Twitch, but other companies doing the same thing or similar things like Mixer, Caffeine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I mean, personally, not that it was ever asked or warranted, but I think Twitch is literally in the infancy of where it needs to be. And I'm personally excited to see the future of what it's going to entail.
Absolutely. People have no idea what they're doing with Twitch right now. Like,
yeah,
you know, if you look back at your Facebook statuses back when it came out in, like, I don't know, 2005 or something, you'd be like, I had no idea how to use Facebook back
right.
then. Nobody did. It's the conventions are going to change of how we interact with the medium.
Yeah, without a doubt. And I'm curious, speaking of the future, the current, and then now even kind of segue back into the past, I would love to hear your personal fandom. Are you more of a current generation type of gamer, or do you pay homage to the classics that, you know, we probably both grew up on?
Why not both? I play new games. Like, right now I'm playing Persona 5. I play Overwatch. I play a lot of the new stuff. And mostly indie games, honestly. I'm a classically trained gamer, you know? So Mega Man is my jam. Original Final Fantasy. You know, I go back, remember I was between jobs years ago, and I was killing tons of time just going back through my, all of my retro games that, yeah, like, they're way harder than I remember them being. Like, Battletoads, I always had a memory of beating that game, but there is no way I actually beat that when I was.
that is a difficult one for sure.
Yeah. So what about you? What do you like?
Well, I mean, now, so how about this? I'll answer the question, but I have a follow up.
Okay.
What do I like? Lately, in the very beginning of my journey through video games, I would say that it was predominantly story-based games. So I was a huge Final Fantasy fan.
Nice.
And then now, as I'm getting older, I don't mind just going in and blowing crap up, you know?
so you play Fortnite?
Well, no, I don't play Fortnite at all.
Me either.
Yeah, so I think the building, to me, I'm such a noob at it that you have to play on PC and in order to get really good at it. And the building is the element to the game. If you can't build, then why even play?
Mm-hmm.
So it takes a lot of practice in order to get really good, because now people are, like, insane at building.
That's
but,
crazy.
Yeah, but I mean, I wouldn't, as silly as it is, Call of Duty and Taboo, I don't mind it because it's just like a shoot 'em up. You know what to expect. You're going in, you're killing people, and you're bouncing. But also, yeah. I'm paying. I have a SNES Classic. That I play. Since we installed it in the office, I've been played every single day. So, you know, it depends. Like Street Fighter, amazing. You know, Super Mario, great too. But my question, my follow up, and I'll like to answer this too, at least as much as I possibly can. What would you say is your Mount Rushmore of video games, your favorite video games of all time? What would you say is the top four Mount Rushmore of video games?
I'm gonna choose franchises, or else it's gonna end up being all Final Fantasy.
fair enough. So
I'll put Final Fantasy up there. I'll put Mega Man up there.
Absolutely.
Top game. Well, okay, so Chrono Trigger.
Nice.
I'm gonna say Call of Duty 2. Not okay. Modern Warfare 2.
No, Call of Duty 2 is good.
Call of Duty 2. It just changed the multiplayer gaming experience for me in terms of first-person shooters.
Yeah, and I think more specifically, was Call of Duty 2 the one where they actually had a live? I don't think they had a live component when 2 was in existence.
What, Xbox Live? Or
yeah, was Xbox Live when Call of Duty 2 was there?
Yeah. So that was 360. So
okay, so okay.
On Xbox Live.
I remember. I think it was either Call of Duty 2 or Call of Duty 3, where I legitimately lost friendships because of the multiplayer gaming.
Wow.
Yeah, like, I mean, I'm being facetious, of course, but there's some arguments that went down during Call of Duty 2, Call of Duty 3, and et cetera. People did you have a similar aspect?
No, I never lost friends over video games. Well, okay, you know what? I'm going to add a fifth head to Mount Rushmore, like some kind of like evil, you know, villain. And I'm going to say MUDs. So like text-based multiplayer games. That's what I was playing. So in high school, these were really popular. It's basically like World of Warcraft, except everything's text. Mm-hmm. So you're typing furiously at your keyboard the entire time. And that genre of games, that's where crazy like social interaction diplomacy went down.
Yeah.
And that was the drama for me.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, I was like a high school kid and we all thought we were cool and we'd be like starting wars with pretty much everyone on the server and
yeah,
getting in real life feuds. Oh yeah.
That's great. So I want to see I'll go franchise too, and I'll say what my favorite game of all time was. So
okay.
I would say the Zelda franchise is like, you know, how can you not at least mention it, because it's Zelda. It's like the game that has started any type of like story base. I would say the Metal Gear Solid franchise is up there for me. I remember at a very young age, playing Metal Gear Solid and getting into a box is probably one of, and then the iconic like alert is always, that was my text message what? Ringtone for the longest time.
That would be frightening to have as a text.
Yeah, no, totally, without a doubt. Metal Gear, Final Fantasy is absolutely up there. And I'd say like those three are probably like my jams. And then you got like favorite video games would be like Super Mario 64 is totally up there. What else? But my favorite game of all time is Kingdom Hearts. So,
yeah,
so I don't know if you would classify that as a franchise, even though they're making three of them. It is kind of like in between Final Fantasy and Disney. But Kingdom Hearts is all-time favorite video game.
I would definitely call that a franchise. DS games. And
yeah, like I'll be honest. I don't play the DS games. I've never really played any of those. But I was strictly like console type of guy.
I think I missed the boat on Kingdom Hearts. I was too old when that came out.
Fair.
I was like 18 or 19, and Disney wasn't my jam. I totally respect Disney. I like the universe, but the game was just too, like, you're just button mashing the whole time, and it was too simple. I think I wanted more complicated games.
Fair enough.
At that time in my life,
I can see that being the case. It is a lot of just smash and go. The story for me was like the kicker. It was just really cool to kind of like relive the childhood, so to speak, by going through all these different worlds and how they're interconnecting to, you know, Sephiroth and Cloud and all the other big games that I played growing up.
Yeah. I will say I've been planning to go back through the anthology before Kingdom Hearts 3, because I want to get it. I don't get it. I want to get it. I love Final Fantasy, Disney, of course, it's a great company. Like, I want to like Kingdom Hearts, so I'm going to give it a shot.
Nice. All right, so this will be – I do have a couple more questions about your philanthropy, but just because I'm a huge fan of gaming, my favorite Final Fantasy game – you said Final Fantasy is your top, right?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so my favorite Final Fantasy game is Final Fantasy IX.
Cool.
What would you say is yours?
7.
Yeah. You mentioned 7. I had to at least ask, but, you know, so why 7?
The story is so good. Yeah. Like, and everything in that game just fits together so well. Like, the art, the music, the story, the battle system feels like it fits the story. Like, materia, which is a huge plot point of the story, is part of the battle system. The kind of the philosophy behind the game, you know, they take a lot from Eastern philosophy and, you know, use that to create the life stream and the Bugenhagen kind of storyline. I think it's really interesting. Everything fits so perfectly, and it is nostalgic for me too, because I was 13 when it came out. Mm-hmm. So it was at that time in my life when I was discovering RPGs. So good.
Well, as we end the conversation, I'd be remiss to at least not mention some type of philanthropy that you do. And so a couple of things that I like to mention, and I would love to hear your take on this and expand as much as you possibly can, but you do a lot of great things for the gaming community. I've personally attended hackathon events that you've done, and you even have an incubator program. Why is this type of stuff so important to you?
I mean, I just think that everyone should do this kind of stuff if it's within your capacity. I mean, it's just in our DNA as people that, you know, we want to run a company that has a triple bottom line. We want to be part of the community. We want to make a better world. And it really fits very well into, I think that's kind of what has informed our business model, in that, you know, we're enabling game lovers from around the world to create content. So we have this opportunity to create classes where we can teach people how to code and make money, so that we can bring these to, like, underprivileged communities who might not have the opportunity to learn JavaScript and mm-hmm. teach them, allow them to interact with video games and have a great time doing it. It's like, it kind of just fits perfectly with our personal DNA and our business model to, you know, to be able to go out and host hackathons that support, you know, Coded by Kids and Tech Girls and, mm-hmm. you know, those type of organizations, host meetups where we're leveling up the engineering expertise of the whole city, you know, as many people as we can get to come to them. And then, you know, we really are working hard on putting together classes where we can have classrooms, go to classrooms in high schools and give people opportunities.
Love it, man. Alex, I truly love what you're doing, and I love this conversation. It was a great combo. To those of you that are still watching and, excuse me, still listening, can you tell a little bit more about where people can find you? How can people be a part of your journey and find out a little bit more about your company?
So our website is redqueen.us. Actually have some big changes to come that I don't think I can reveal quite yet. I'm on Twitter at Alex_Red_Queen, and the company Red Queen Gaming is on Twitter at Red Queen Gaming.
Awesome. Well, good stuff. And all of the mentions will be in the show notes. So if somebody does want to go ahead and do their own research to find out a little bit more about your company, they can tweet you about their favorite game. They can most certainly do so.
Yeah.
But Alex, thank you so much for your time.
You've been listening to Blind Entrepreneurship, brought to you by Penji. Our guest this week was Alex Gilbert. All right, listeners, I'm sending a worldwide challenge. This week, I'd like you to take a look at your current to-do list. Whether it's for the day or maybe it's for the week, look at it deeply and think to yourself, is there anything on this list that if I don't do it today, my business will be fine? Focus on the things that truly matter and the things that move boulders, not pebbles. And when you do, tweet me at GrisbowskiJ or head over to tveshow.com and drop a comment on this week's episode. You can find more about Alex at redqueen.us. Again, that is redqueen.us. And as for me, you can check out Penji at penji.co if you need on-demand graphic design support for your business. And head over to our podcast website, which is tbeshow.com. If you enjoyed this episode, I would greatly appreciate it, and it would mean the absolute world to me if you could share it throughout the interwebs. Or at the very least, share this with a friend. It's the only way that we can cure blindness in business. Go out there and execute your vision, everybody. Have a great rest of your day.